It's time for justice. Welcome to the Central Virginia Legal Aid Radio Show, heard every Wednesday from 12:30 to 1 p.m. on 97.3 FM WRIR and at www.wrir.org. I'm your host, Marty Wegbright. This show is written and produced by Central Virginia Legal Aid Society. We give free, civil, non-criminal legal aid to low-income people in Richmond, Petersburg, Charlottesville, and surrounding cities and counties. Coming up on this week's show...
If the purchaser doesn't have an attorney, if, for example, they go to a title company for a closing, that title company cannot explain the legal consequences of the forms that the purchaser is signing. They can point to signature lines, but they can't go into a legal, that would be the unauthorized practice of law. They cannot explain what a deed does, what a deed of trust does, what the legal consequences to the purchaser would be.
Real estate attorney Stuart Simon explains what real estate lawyers do and why everyone buying or selling a house needs one. And during this week's News You Can Use, we'll tell you about Governor McAuliffe's Healthy Virginia Plan, which covers a few of the gaps left by the General Assembly's refusal to expand Medicaid. All that and more coming up. Stay with us. The show was supported in part by a grant from the Virginia Law Foundation. This show, number 269, is the sole responsibility of Central Virginia Legal Aid Society and gives only general legal information. If you have a legal problem and need specific legal advice about your situation, contact an attorney. If you can't afford an attorney, we'll tell you later in the show how to get free legal advice or representation in a civil case. The Central Virginia Legal Aid Radio Show is heard every Wednesday at 12:30 on WRIR 97.3 FM, Richmond Independent Radio, and online at www.wrir.org, and is made possible by community radio volunteers at WRIR. And now, this week's News You Can Use. In response to the General Assembly's refusal to expand Medicaid, Governor McAuliffe has implemented a Healthy Virginia plan to cover a few of the gaps. The plan has five components. First is a GAP program for people with serious mental illnesses. This program covers people who are uninsured, age 21 to 64, who are U.S. citizens or lawfully residing immigrants, and who are seriously mentally ill. The illnesses include major depression, bipolar disorder, schizophrenia, PTSD, and panic disorder. Participants must be at or below 60% of federal poverty levels. Second is dental services for pregnant women on Medicaid and on Famous Moms. Dental services are significant both for the health of the expectant mother and the newborn. A woman can attest to her pregnancy and no verification is required. Coverage continues for 60 days after the pregnancy ends. Participants must be at or below 205% of federal poverty levels. Third is FAMUS for children and pregnant dependents of state employees. Since the beginning of FAMUS, or Family Access to Medical Insurance Security, children and pregnant women with access to subsidized state employee health insurance have not been eligible for FAMUS. However, since January 1, 2015, this barrier to FAMUS enrollment has been removed. Fourth, the Veterans Access, Choice, and Accountability Act. This means veterans already enrolled in VA health care may be able to receive care from non-VA facilities instead of waiting for a VA appointment or traveling to a VA facility. Eligible veterans must live more than 40 miles from a veterans health center or must have been waiting more than 30 days for VA medical care. If either of these rules is met, they will have special access to federally qualified health clinics. Further details are available at www.va.gov/OPA/Choice Act. Fifth are support, outreach, and application assistance efforts, the Department of Medical Assistance Services has dedicated federal funds for community health education projects, in-person assisters, child health outreach, media, and marketing. Among other things, these efforts publicize the availability of special enrollment periods to purchase health insurance under the Affordable Care Act's online health insurance marketplace. Special enrollment periods happen due to life changes, such as marriage, birth or adoption of a child, loss of health insurance, moving to a new area, gaining a new immigration status, release from incarceration, or an increase in income. Information about all of these programs is available at Cover Virginia, toll-free, 1-555-869-9190. With this week's news you can use, this is your host, Marty Wegbright. Welcome back to the Central Virginia Legal Aid Radio Show on WRIR 97.3 FM, Richmond Independent Radio. We're here at the Simon Law Office and speaking with Stuart Simon. He is a real estate attorney, and we will be talking today about what a real estate lawyer does and why you need one. Welcome to the show, Stuart.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
Would you begin by telling our listening audience sort of the general process of buying and selling a house and the whole settlement process?
Well, when you buy real estate, interestingly, you buy a piece of land and you get whatever is attached to it. Now, the whole idea, the concept is that the seller wants to sell as little as possible of this land and the buyer wants to get as much as possible. And so there's a conflict from the very beginning. Land does not consist of just one thing. There are different elements. For example, if you buy a house in a subdivision, that house will also have easements for Dominion Power, for the city water, for different people to be able to use land which comes along with that house. And so you don't get to block them from coming onto your land. In fact, you pay the taxes on it, and they get to use it for their needs. Obviously, you're going to want them to, but still you need to be aware of this. So you start out with a real estate contract in which the seller promises to sell a certain lot, and then you decide what comes along with that. Well, the house is attached. Do appliances come along with that? Appliances are not necessarily attached to the house. Some are, some aren't. So you talk about whether or not you want to buy and he wants to sell the appliances. There may be certain work that needs to be done in the house. Do you get an inspection? Do you have somebody come into the house and tell you all the things that are wrong? And if you find things are wrong, then what? Does the seller have to fix them? Maybe not, if he doesn't want to. It depends on how the inspection clause is written.
And so when does all of this happen? It sounds like this happens fairly early in the process.
Correct. This happens when you first see the house, when you first put an offer in. Keep in mind that when you make the first offer, that is not yet a contract. And when the seller comes back with changes to your first offer, that's still not a contract. You don't have a contract to buy the house until both people have signed an untouched, unchanged document. At that point, there is a contract where he must perform and you must perform.
And who generally prepares that contract?
Most of the time it's a real estate agent. And sometimes there are two real estate agents, one representing the buyer and one representing the seller. They get a commission. The commission is paid out of the proceeds of sale from the seller's funds. So the buyer ordinarily is not out of pocket any extra money to pay this commission. One of the things that goes into the contract, one of the most important things, is that the contract itself has certain contingencies. The biggest one is financing. Unless you're prepared to pay cash, and almost nobody is, there's a financing clause in the contract that says it is subject to the purchaser being able to obtain a loan in the amount of X dollars or X percent of the purchase value at certain interest rate And if you can't get that financing, then it's not feasible for you to buy that house. And you can get away from the contract. You can walk from the contract. But if you can get that financing, then that contingency goes away and you are otherwise bound under the contract.
And does that contingency clause usually have a time limit on it that you must get this financing of this amount at this rate by a certain date or the deal is off?
Ordinarily, it will require that the purchaser apply for the loan within 5 days. And if he doesn't, he could be in default. The purchaser does have to act in good faith all the way through. So if you're going to buy a house, you can't play games and delay applying for the financing. Once you've applied, then the bank has to approve the financing, but the contract can't control what the bank does. The contract can only control what the parties do. So you are bound to apply for the loan. There is usually a time element in most of the contingencies. For example, the inspection is usually required to be done within 5 or 10 days, if an inspection is required at all. And then the parties can negotiate back and forth over who's going to make what repairs, or if anybody's going to make any repairs.
And so once the financing comes through, what is the next step?
Well, once the financing is approved, and there is a time frame after that, but once the financing is, once the financing has been applied for, the bank has to give the buyer a preliminary set of costs for what the loan is going to cost him. Interest rate, points, any upfront fees, the bank has to give that to the buyer. Now, the buyer could at that time go to an attorney or and ask the attorney to begin his job in this process. The buyer's attorney's job is to check into the title for the property, that is, have a title examination done in the record room of the circuit court of the jurisdiction they're buying, and he will look for any defects in title. A defect in title could be anything from the seller's current mortgage to those easements to Dominion Power that I spoke about earlier. It could be judgments that have been recorded against the seller. It could be that the property was passed to the seller by will, and you would have to check to make sure you have all the proper parties involved in the transaction. Once the purchaser's attorney has determined the state of the title, then he will ordinarily go to the seller's attorney and ask the seller's attorney to correct any defects that he found. And if there are none found, having made contact with the seller's attorney, he will tell him as things get closer, he will send him the description, and the seller's attorney will prepare the deed on behalf of the seller.
And so what happens if the buyer foolishly decides not to have an attorney do that title examination?
Well, the title examination is required by the lender. So if there is a lender involved, they're going to want, at a minimum, lender's title insurance coverage, and that will require the title examination either by an examiner or by an attorney or by a title company. But that will require a title examination. It is almost impossible for a buyer with outside money to buy a house without a title exam. If the buyer does not want one, no one's going to lend him the money. The buyer, in some cases, you have professional buyers who will go out and do their own title exam and try and save money. And that's only in rare circumstances where they can afford to take the risk of a problem on the title.
So if there is a problem with a title that the buyer's attorney communicates to the seller's attorney, how does that problem get cleared up?
Well, it depends entirely on what the problem is. A frequent problem is an unreleased deed of trust or mortgage. It may be that when the seller bought the property, the seller, for some reason, his attorney or title company, did not release the prior seller's mortgage, and it's still of record in the courthouse. It may have been paid, but not released. That's the most common problem. So then the current seller's attorney will go back to the prior attorney or the prior seller's title insurance policy and ask them to make the correction to get that deed of trust released from title. As long as it's of record in the courthouse, it is a lien on the property, and the new buyer cannot get clear title.
And what about things like real estate property taxes levied by the local independent city or county? How are those handled?
Well, in the contract, there's language that says that current taxes and water assessments and governmental fees are prorated as of the closing date. So if the seller has not paid his taxes for some period of time, the buyer's attorney will discover that, and that money will be taken from the seller's proceeds at closing and credited or paid directly to the city or county. All of those expenses are prorated as of the date of closing. So sometimes the purchaser will have to pay a few dollars in advance in order to make the payment. Sometimes it will come out of the seller's proceeds. But at least when the purchaser closes, he knows that he's starting with an even payment plan. He doesn't owe anybody. There is no money owed on the house that he hasn't been told about.
So you mentioned in terms of the buyer's attorney doing the title examination, making sure that there are no judgments, or if there are, they're communicated to the seller's attorney. Same thing with taxes. What other duties and function does the buyer's attorney perform?
Well, the simplest transaction consists of three legal documents, perhaps four. The deed, which conveys the property from the seller to the buyer, and the buyer has a choice of how he wishes to take title, whether it be as an individual or a married couple, which might be tenants by the entirety, or jointly with somebody else. So the deed then is signed by the seller, and that transfers the property and is recorded at the courthouse. The next document is normally the note, an IOU made payable to some lender, and that has certain terms in it, interest rates, time periods, where the payments are due, when the full amount is due, whether or not the lender will collect for taxes and insurance each month. These are all in the note, and the buyer's attorney will explain that to the buyer at closing. The last document is the deed of trust, and the deed of trust is a mortgage. It's where the new owner of the property conveys an interest to a neutral, supposedly neutral, trustee to hold this interest until the loan is either paid for, paid in full, or goes into default because the purchaser has not paid the payments, the taxes, or the insurance. Those are all acts of default. That's the bare bones transaction, together with a statement of how the money is spent, money in, money out. Transactions are rarely that simple, because when you have a lender, an institutional lender, they will usually have many, many requirements that go to disclosure, that talk about the purchaser's obligations to the bank, that cover the bank as far as their auditors are concerned. So the three documents then turn into about 25 or 30 documents, all of which the buyer's attorney will explain and review with the buyer at closing.
And let's go to the other side of the closing table. What you mentioned that the seller's attorney would get the title exam from the buyer's attorney.
Correct.
And would prepare, at a minimum, the deed. What are the other duties, responsibilities of the seller's attorney?
Well, the seller's attorney provides the information for the buyer's attorney to send a 1099 form, which is a sort of a statement of whether or not any taxes are due on the sale of the property, which would be rare, but the form has to be signed. The seller's attorney will also prepare an affidavit saying that the seller does not owe any money to any mechanics or material men or anybody who has supplied work or done work on the property within the last 123 days of closing. And the reason for this is if work is done on the property, and the time period is actually 90 days from the end of the month that it's done. If work is done on the property, then that person who's done the work has the right to file a lien against the property, and it will follow the property after closing. The buyer's attorney has no will have no knowledge of whether such work has been done unless there is a statement from the seller that he has paid it. So when the deed of trust and the deed are recorded, it could be that there are, you know, 80 days left in the time period within which the mechanic can file his lien. So that's something very important that the seller's attorney provides at closing. In addition, both attorneys go through a settlement statement that explains where all the money goes. The closing consists of the buyer coming to the attorney's office, bringing a check, cashiers are certified as required, bring a check for his down payment. His lender will have already wired money into the attorney's office. So the attorney will usually have money from two sources, which goes into his escrow account. The attorney then disperses all of the money that needs to be dispersed out of the closing, which includes the sales commissions, taxes, payment for the termite inspection, which we haven't talked about, but is a key element, any fees due back to the bank, the cost of the title insurance, and the attorney's fees for both the seller's attorney and the purchaser's attorney are usually the last thing to be paid. And that sort of points out the fact that the closing is maybe only two-thirds of the process. There's a lot of follow-up afterwards to make sure that the purchaser ends up with clear title to his property.
And can you give us a story to illustrate some of the points that you have been making during the interview?
It frequently happens that someone will come to the office. I will get a contract from a realtor or from a client. And then we begin our discussions with who's going to do what in the process. We follow along with the client and the realtor as far as the inspections that are required. In the meantime, the client obtains his own homeowner's insurance and will frequently call for advice on who to use and what sorts of coverages he needs. And then as we get the title work in, we can review it here to see if there's any work that needs to be done by the seller's attorney. If there isn't, then we go forward with the closing. But the process is usually very straightforward, except that so frequently there are unreleased deeds of trust or unpaid judgments or things that have to be followed up on. That's where the time is required.
So what are the pitfalls that can happen to buyers who don't have attorneys or sellers who don't have attorneys when they're buying and selling real estate?
Well, a seller must have an attorney. An attorney is required to draw the deed so that whether they merely draw the deed or whether they follow through with representation of the seller to correct the defects, and in that there is some discretion, but an attorney must be involved in drawing the deed for the seller. If the purchaser doesn't have an attorney, if, for example, they go to a title company for a closing, that title company cannot explain the legal consequences of the forms that the purchaser is signing. They can point to signature lines, but they can't go into a legal, that would be the unauthorized practice of law. They cannot explain what a deed does, what a deed of trust does, what the legal consequences to the purchaser would be. There are many times when people are buying from friends and the sellers aren't even aware of the status of their property, or perhaps they inherited it and one of their ancestors had put liens on the property that they're unaware of, and then they want to sell it to the purchasers and everybody thinks they can close on a handshake, and it just doesn't work that way.
And one of the myths that is out there is that, well, one attorney can take care of the whole thing for both the seller and the buyer. Would you care to explode that myth?
Well, it happens all the time, frankly. It happens all the time, and it is actually permitted by law as long as there is full disclosure to both sides of what the attorney is going to do. In that case, the attorney cannot represent one against the other. And if there is a conflict, he must back out. If there is no conflict, and as I was mentioning earlier, and the seller's attorney's job is merely to draft the deed As long as everyone understands that's the attorney's role, he can draft the deed for the seller and represent the purchaser in the preparing the rest of the package for the lender and for the purchaser himself.
Is that a good idea?
It's always a better idea to have your own attorney. It's easier to tell your agent just to let the other guy do it, but it's always a good idea to have somebody you can call to ask questions of, and he can answer questions that are particularized to you and to your transaction, and he isn't worrying about somebody else looking over his shoulder. The cost is the same, so you're not saving any money by not having your own attorney.
Well, thank you very much. We have been speaking with real estate attorney Stuart Simon about what real estate attorneys do and why you need one, whether you're the buyer or the seller. Thank you so much for being on the show.
Thank you. It was a pleasure.
That's all for this week's Central Virginia Legal Aid Radio Show. This show is heard every Wednesday from 12:30 to 1 p.m. The show is the sole responsibility of Central Virginia Legal Aid Society. To see if you can get free civil legal aid, call during intake hours. These are Monday through Thursday, 9 a.m. to 11:30 a.m. and 1 p.m. to 2:30 p.m. The phone number is 200-6046 for intake, 648-1012 for the main number, and 1-800-868-1012 to call toll-free. This show provides only general legal information. If you have a legal problem and need specific legal advice about your situation, contact an attorney. If you can't afford one, call Central Virginia Legal Aid Society. Mortgage lenders often fail to properly service a mortgage or follow requirements for foreclosure. Join us next Wednesday at 12:30 p.m. when private attorney Henry McLaughlin discusses mortgage foreclosures and how to prevent them in a rebroadcast of a show originally heard on June 18, 2014. That's law for the rest of us next week on the Central Virginia Legal Aid Radio Show. I'm Marty Wegmer.